This morning, I was saying to Danny that I've obviously prayed, obviously done lots of sermons over the years, but this is the first time I've done a sermon on one verse. And I was relating, it immediately reminded me of a time in Kenya with Karen, and we were going along with a Kenyan head of Church Army Africa and a Ugandan preacher. And Karen was asking what we were doing the next day, which was a Sunday. And the Ugandan preacher said, it's a sermon on, and I can't remember which verse it was, but it was one verse. And Karen, in her inimitable fashion, said, well, I mean, she said, I hope that's a good preacher, because, you know, he could sermon on one verse. And he said, it's a very good preacher, it's me. So it's Remembrance Sunday. So the theme will be vaguely around Remembrance Sunday, but with other things in. So if we can have slide two, and this will be your one verse. Obviously, there will be some other verses added in. It's a verse you know well. I've done it in, I don't usually use the King James, but there you are. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. It's a verse you'll know well, John 15:13. And it's first started to get used a lot in the First World War. It was a way of recruiting people, to get people to think that they really ought to be doing something and joining up. And obviously it's been used in remembrance services and various other things for a lot. And we'll have a look at that later. And because this morning is Remembrance Sunday, we've already commemorated those who died serving in wars and conflicts. And it's very right that we should do so. We also remember those who risked their lives but were not killed. And I think I may have told you, obviously I've never been in the armed forces because I'm too young, but my father was, and he drove a fuel tanker in North Africa. I think I may have told you that. And obviously he survived, or else I wouldn't be here. But his best friend, who did exactly the same, was blown up in front of him. So my father was not killed, but his best mate was. And so we remember those who died, but let's also remember those who risked their lives and survived. Sometimes, as has been mentioned, physically scarred or mentally scarred, or both. I was told that my father's character and outlook was completely changed by his wartime experience. And that happened to many, of course. Trauma is very real and long-lasting. It has long-lasting consequences, whether it's caused in conflict or in civilian circumstances. So I want to think this morning about the many people, and it's interesting that God works in a funny way, doesn't it? Because in the prayers and in the other things that we mentioned, we've all had these references to people other than people in the services, which is good. So this morning I want to think about people who risk their lives in service in both military and civilian context. And as already been mentioned, as doctors and nurses, especially during this pandemic, and as I mentioned to some people this morning, one of Karen's fellow lecturers died this week, and one of her students died of COVID this week. So, you know, there are real risks out there. Then, of course, there are firemen, police, Coast Guard, lifeboat crew. And, of course, the thing which always amazes me about the lifeboat crew, they're all unpaid volunteers, which is absolutely amazing. And every time the thing goes off, they go off into the rough seas, unpaid, to go and save people's life and risk their own. And perhaps one thing you might not think about, but whilst part it's part of their business and they make money out of it, fishermen have one of the highest fatality rates of any occupation in the country. And so when we think about it, fish and chips can be a lot more expensive than we often think. And so there are so many who give so much and risk so much for others. So if we can have slide three, just a sort of little thing. Here's obviously a policeman and some soldiers. I think the incident there is a sort of report of a suspicious circumstance, and they're off to investigate. So in those sort of things, you don't know what's going to happen and what's there. And obviously they're off to do that. Next one, please. That's a fairly obvious one. Doctors and nurses working away in hospital during the pandemic. It doesn't matter what machinery you've got, but you've still got all the risks. And so just one of Karen's students has just died from COVID, from having served on the ward. And the next one, fairly obvious, firemen, very risky occupation. There they are fighting a house fire. But sometimes when you see some of these fires, of course, it's horrendous, isn't it? You get really big fires, really flammable stuff, particularly industrial buildings where they've got no idea sometimes what's in there. You know, these people, but they're there doing their job to the best of their ability. Next one. Anyone know what that particular thing is? It's a trawler, believe it or not. It's actually a fishing boat, and it's almost disappeared under the waves. So coming back to the fish and chips, you know, and it's actually in the North Sea, so it could be your cod and your haddock or whatever. So, you know, that gives you some idea of what people have to go out to go and get the food that we eat. Next one. Also in heavy seas, everyone will recognise that. It's a lifeboat, yes. There's a lifeboat. And probably many of you have seen the Saving Lives at Sea programme, which is absolutely amazing. And again, lifeboat crew risking their lives to save others and for no pay whatsoever. And the last one. Anyone know who these three are? Anyone read Thelma's notices? These are the Chernobyl three. These are the people who went down under the reactor and swam in the radioactive water to stop an even worse explosion in Chernobyl. That's the three of them. Contrary to some reports, they didn't all immediately die of radiation sickness. The last one actually survived quite a long while afterwards. But they did all, obviously they did die of radiation in the end. So as we stated before, John 15:13 verse is very much quoted in Christian services. But if you think about the words of that, is that for a Christian the greatest love that you die for your friends? In most of the cases we've looked at, the people risking their lives were risking their lives to complete strangers. So how does that fit with the verse about friends? So it's worth looking at that verse in context and thinking what the verse really is about. The next slide, please, sir. And there it is. No, that's not the one. Sorry. No. Should be John 15:9. That's it. Thank you. As the Father loved me, Jesus continued, so I loved you. Remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I've said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and so that your joy may be full. This is my command, love one another in the same way that I loved you. No one has a love greater than this, to lay down your life for your friends. You are my friends if you do what I tell you. I'm not calling you servant any longer. Servants don't know what their master's doing, but I've called you friends because I've let you know everything I've heard from my Father. So in this expanded part here in context, Jesus defines who the friends are. They're his disciples. The one who's going to lay down his life for these friends is Jesus himself. And we had a reference to that this morning. The greatest sacrifice of all, of course, is Jesus laying down his life for all of us. However, Jesus lays down his life for the whole world, not just the disciples and those who love him, but for everyone. Once for all, Jesus died on the cross for everyone. So here's another gospel passage about love and hate, which is the next one. Yes. This is a Matthew version. You're familiar with the old written law. This is actually, you'll recognise the style. It's a Eugene Peterson Message version. You're familiar with the old written law, love your friend, and its unwritten companion, hate your enemy. I'm challenging that. Jesus is speaking, of course. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the supple moves of prayer. For then you're working out of your true selves, your God-created selves. This is what God does. He gives his best. I'm sorry, it has to be he, but you have to use one pronoun or another. We've had the discussion before about God not having gender, but you have to use a pronoun somewhere. He gives his best, the sun to warm and the rain to nourish. To everyone, regardless the good and bad, the nice and nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. In a word, what I'm saying is grow up. Your kingdom subjects. Now live like it is. Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously towards others the way God lives towards you. That sounds great, doesn't it? Good stuff. Not so easy to do, but it sounds good. But do I have to love everyone? And some people might say, even especially, of course, detractors from Christianity will say, well, sorry, in the Old Testament, there's lots of hatred. Even God hates people. And you may have heard that said. So let's have a look at the next verse. There you are. This is Psalm 139. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord, and detest those who rise up against you? I absolutely hate them. To me, they are enemies, which seems to be sort of going in there. And just in case you just rub that in a bit, you may also have heard the phrase, Esau, I, and this is God speaking, hated. And that's in Malachi 1, and that's actually what it says. That's actually what it says. But we need to understand quite clearly what the word hated meant as Jews understood it. And it isn't quite as we'd expect. And it isn't going out and doing nasty things to people because we don't like them. That's a very modern Western connotation of hatred. But that's not the Jewish idea of hatred. So we need to understand that. So centuries before there ever was Hebrew letters, Hebrew script, and before their language came into that form, the language began as a type of pictographic script. So in other words, little pictures made up the words. So the word which is often translated as hate, usually in fact, this is your one Hebrew word, you won't get any more than this today, is sornei, and that's hate. And if I can have the next slide. Now this is the pictogram from which that word sornei comes, and it's a thorn and a seed. Note that, I've had quite difficulty finding a decent picture of that, but you get the drift. There are seeds and there are thorns, and they're together. And so sornei, hate, isn't the thing where you go charging off and say, I don't like you, so I'm going to knock your block off. That's not the Jewish idea at all. Sornei, in the Jewish concept, from that pictogram, is an avoidance of pain. Now, thorns were actually used as fences to protect flocks from predators, and even used as weapons, sometimes to fight off wild animals and so on. So the idea was that thorns cause pain, and therefore the pain made someone avoid it, whatever caused it. Thorns created a shield, a sort of hedge of protection. And sometimes, obviously, while there were intense emotions involved, ancient Hebrew, the view of hate was more about being hurt or wounded by something, particularly if love was involved. And I think probably there's probably quite a lot of us who can relate to love causing pain. It's not always that lovely. Oh, isn't it everything wonderful? Sometimes we all really get hurt. So you can get the gist of these things. So the idea here is being wounded by something. And because of that, opening yourself to love meant opening to hurt. So hatred wasn't intense confrontational emotion and inflicting pain. Instead, it was about making choices to avoid that pain, physical or emotional. So it meant staying away from sources of pain. That way, of course, you weren't hurt. So if you look in any of the passages in the Bible and you think about what that definition of pain, of that hate is, it will make a lot more sense. We go back to Esau, where I hated. This isn't God doing a nasty thing to Esau just because he didn't like Esau and he liked his brother. He didn't like his brother that much either. But the fact is that he stayed away from him. There were those that God gave special attention to, and we might say, oh, that's wickedly unfair, but it's a fact. Read your Bible. There are those God gave special attention to, and some those God gave less attention to. So this idea of hatred is staying away. And you can see in the Matthew 5 one there, this is another thing about staying away. And if you think about some of the parables, when you're talking about love and hatred, you think about the parable of the Good Samaritan. What was so amazing about the picking up a Samaritan? Why did Jesus pick a Samaritan for the parable of the Good Samaritan? Yes, because they hated Samaritans. But they didn't hate them by going off and killing them. They lived alongside each other, but they avoided them as much as possible. And that, of course, is what makes the parable so powerful. because the Samaritan, far from staying away from the Jewish person who's been mugged, as we would say today, he helps him. And of course, even the Jewish teacher of the law has to spit out and say, well, you know, I suppose the one who showed him mercy was the one who was, you know, under your breath. I'm not doing Hebrew under my breath, that's a bit difficult. But you get the idea that what you did, if you really didn't like someone, whether it was a rational dislike, and we have rational dislikes, it could be because they're really nasty people. I mean, everybody's not nice, I'm afraid. That's the real world too. So whether you dislike people because they are not nice people, or whether there's all sorts of other reasons to dislike them, or whether it's just sheer prejudice, like the Jews and the Samaritans, and we can think of all manner of other prejudices, of course. But whatever it is, the fact is that that sort of staying away was what was practiced in the Old Testament. That was their idea of hatred. Now, of course, Jesus is saying something slightly different here. So let's think about what lessons we can pick up from this understanding of these verses. Now, fortunately, we most of us are not going to be called upon to die for anyone, friends or otherwise. But of course, we are called to love people. That doesn't mean to be their best mates with them necessarily, but to treat them as well as we would do your friends, not to mistreat them, not to deliberately mistreat them. We have no mandate whatsoever to mistreat people we don't like, even those who may be nasty to us. That's completely contrary to what the Bible says. And does anyone remember the reference to in John's letter about loving God and loving your brother? If a man says he loves God but hates his brother, he's a liar. You know, this is blunt stuff, isn't it? So this is, you know, this puts the thing into its perspective. God gives his best, and it says there, the sun to warm and the rain to nourish. To everyone, regardless. The good, the bad, the nice, the nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? We're back to that passage again. Anybody can do that. And indeed, you can see that. Even quite nasty people are friends with other quite nasty people. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. And again, there's this idea of saying hello to people. This is the greeting thing. And even if it is just good morning, the fact is that if you've got a particularly miserable neighbour who never speaks to you, say hello, say good morning. Heap coals on his head, as the biblical phrase goes. You know, really surprise them. That's a godly thing to do. If you go past him and say you're a miserable old git, that doesn't really take you very far, does it? Maybe true, but it doesn't take you very far. Your kingdom subjects, now live like it. Live out your God-created identity. This is another part of that passage. Live generously and graciously toward others, the way God lives towards you. So as we commemorate the lives today of those who died in various wars, and also those who have given their lives for all sorts of other, daily risk their lives in our service, as a I think it's a film quote, you will tell me which film it was if you like, let us be worthy of them all. Amen.